Coming down the aisle at a combined weight of 436 pounds, the team of Jeffrey Martin, Brian Berga, the Jersey Wrecking Crew.
That song can only mean one thing. That means you're listening to the High Spot Podcast. Catch us on Twitter at High Spot Podcast for all the latest news and notes of professional wrestling and entertainment. We are the Jersey Wrecking Crew. I am Brian Berg alongside my tag team partner, Jeff Martin, recapping WWE Fastlane, also recapping Raw and SmackDown as well, leading to the events that happened after the last pay-per-view before WrestleMania. Jeff, how are you, man?
Doing good, man. Fastlane was a downer. I gotta, you know, just say that right off the bat. But, you know, we got a great episode today. We got Jody McDonald on, Jody Mack from WFAN, WIP in Philly, and Sirius XM Radio going to join us. A lot of people don't know this, but in the late 80s and early 90s, he had his own wrestling show in New York, very late at night, but still a wrestling show, and a guy that was ahead of his time. Jody McDonald will join us, talk some wrestling, talk some current storylines, and heading into WrestleMania. So very excited for the show, and I guess we're going to start off by, we're going to recap Fastlane, and I tell you, sitting next to me, and we're looking at each other and saying, wow, the inevitable happened, and that is Bill Goldberg is your new Universal Champion.
I think it was inevitable, Jeff. We both kind of thought this outcome was going to happen when we started previewing and giving our predictions for W Fastlane. I can't say I'm surprised. We knew it was going to happen. But unfortunately, we wanted the other side of it. My bold prediction or my bold feeling, I didn't predict it. I just, my idea of how I wanted to book it was that, you know, let's save the Universal title for Chris Jericho and Kevin Owens just because I thought that storyline would make it more exciting, would make it more appealing, a title that Jericho's never won. He's won every single title now. That was one there. The betrayal from the Friends, the Festival of Friendship that happened on Raw. There's so much more you could dive into it rather than giving a rivalry, which is 15 years now in the making since the last time they fought WrestleMania 20. To this point, to me, I didn't believe it as much because I really felt the Universal title in the rivalry between Brock Lesnar and Goldberg didn't really matter.
No, I mean, it really didn't. And now you have a match at WrestleMania, which WWE wanted and definitely felt that it was worthy of being for the Universal Championship between, you know, Brock Lesnar and Bill Goldberg. So that's what you're going to get. I want to say maybe 15 years down the road, but maybe I think 13 years in the making. So,
well, it feels like, you know, 15.
Feels like 15, right?
It feels like 20.
It may feel like 20 by the time we get there and we actually watch the match. But, you know, as we're looking, and we had Bailey and Charlotte come on, and it's like 10:20, and I'm looking at you and I'm saying, how long is this match going to go? I didn't think Kevin Owens and either the pay-per-view is going to end early, or we're going to get maybe 15, 20 minutes of Owens and Goldberg, which was beyond the realm of possibility.
Yeah, we knew it was going to be a short match regardless. Yeah. So we were just kind of anticipating how long the women's championship match was going to go.
Everyone is either angry, everyone either is going along with it, they're upset, you know.
Yeah, well, the diehard core wrestling fan, Jeff, is upset just because they, you know, their feelings towards, and you and I have expressed it for part-timers in this business, right? We think they have their place, but when you see guys like, for example, Kevin Owens and AJ Styles from SmackDown Live, and see the work they've put in, especially Kevin, he was here way before AJ was, but AJ's had a phenomenal last year of 2016 and 2017. You see the work they put in, and people believe in them. They're over. The crowd's reacting to them. And then they're not rewarded, for me at least, for that moment at WrestleMania. Now, they're both going to be at WrestleMania, but not in the positions as, you know, you and I, and I'm sure a lot of people who listen to the show, would want them to be in.
Honestly, like, I don't see anybody, you know, giving up the WrestleMania ticket because Goldberg and Brock Lesnar are going to headline it, you know?
No, because that's how they get you. They make you pay for the packages early on because you don't know what's going on. If they had done it, for example, after Fastlane, I would have
ordered. Would it turned you off? Would it have really made you hesitant from buying a ticket?
Maybe the price that I paid, yes.
Okay. All right. Well,
I still would have gone for the experience. Yeah. But
yeah, it's still, again, it's an experience, right? And you're saying that it's going to sell itself. So I think the matches that are added to the card, if you take a look at it, we'll take a look at it after we recap Fastlane. We're going to see that it's kind of a stacked lineup. It may not be the lineup that we expected, but still, it's you've got Kevin Owens and Chris Jericho that we're going to get to for the U.S. Championship. You know, you've got Shane McMahon, AJ Styles, you know, whether it's, you know, I think that's funny, Bryce. Someone mentioned last year, we're like, oh my God, Shane McMahon's back. I can't wait to see him take on The Undertaker. And then this year, we're like, oh my God, I don't see Shane McMahon take on AJ Styles. So it's kind of funny how fickle we are as wrestling fans, how one second we don't want to see it. And now, you know, we want to see Shane McMahon last year, and now we don't. So that's pretty funny that I was thinking about too, and I saw on Twitter. So a lot of smart wrestling fans, you know, just putting their opinions out there. But as far as the card, you know what? Hey, it is what it is, man. That's what they were pushing for the Universal Championship, Goldberg and Brock Lesnar. So that's what we're going to get. Can't change it now. And, you know, the seeds were planted on Monday night with the confrontation and Brock Lesnar getting the better of Bill Goldberg. But just in general, though, we were talking about the part-timers, full-timers. We'll talk to Jody Mack about it. But, again, it's going to lead to credence. As we head into WrestleMania, I don't see the nostalgia factor. I don't see this being the end of part-timers. Just, I guess, the beginning of a long run with them at WrestleMania.
You know, not only was the Universal title on the line, we also had, you know, the Raw Women's Championship. We had the Cruiserweight title. We had the tag team titles on the line. So I know a lot of focal point was on that to see where it was going to go, because it was going to lead to who was probably going to, I don't know, semi-main event WrestleMania. But let's look at the women's division for a second, too, where, you know, it gained a lot of momentum and there's this big revolution, especially after WrestleMania 32 in Dallas, where, like, the women were coming up and now they were considered just as good as the men. They were going to be put in main event matches. You know, you still have women like Charlotte and Sasha and Bayley. I'm sure Becky saying, you know, they won't rest until women are main eventing WrestleMania. I don't know if that will ever happen. I'm sure it's there's an ability.
Well, it's International Women's Week, Bryce. We got to, you know, have some glimmer of hope. So maybe one day they'll do it, but certainly not this year.
Yeah. And or they'll just protest and not show up to WrestleMania. Who knows?
Really? Hey, they might not show up to work. No, but hey, you never know. Hopefully one day it happens. Is it in the near future? I don't think so. I don't think in the distant future either, but we'll see that. But kind of interesting with Charlotte losing her pay-per-view streak with Bayley, you know, coming out the winner, and again, Sasha Banks interferes. Again, the development is if Bayley can do it on her own, and Sasha Banks the reason why. And, you know, it's a good storyline, I think, but will Sasha Banks turn heel before or after WrestleMania is the question. Your thoughts real quick on the match itself at Fastlane.
I thought the match itself was okay. There wasn't really anything special behind it. When it comes to the point you just made, Jeff, with the undefeated streak at pay-per-views going on, I thought with that behind it and the way they were promoting it and constantly putting it in your face, I thought that was going to cause Charlotte to regain her title again and become a five-time Raw Women's Champion. That being said, when you and I did the recap show right after Fastlane, when we did it with Chris Hamill, Michael Falcone, and also, you know, the Queen Bee Mary came on as well.
Well, she took over that show, didn't she?
Oh, she was fired up. She had a glass of wine, and they actually fired her up even more, man.
I thought they were just going to – I thought, she, you know, she was a caller, and I thought we were going to cut it out, and then we ended up being Queen Bee and guests.
Exactly. I mean, but again, it just shows the fact that we had a lot to say about it. But she brought up a great point, though, and I'll tell our audience, too, that, you know, when it came to that undefeated streak with Charlotte, similar to Bill Goldberg, we'll use him as an example, too. The way they ended it was just, you're like, eh, really? You're going to end it that way? And the way they ended Charlotte's undefeated pay-per-view streak, you would think they would wait. You had one pay-per-view left till WrestleMania. Why not at the grandest stage of them all have that one be done and used? And doesn't really look like that's going to happen now, because obviously Bayley retained the title. But to me, it was a so-it-so. I think it's really building up now towards WrestleMania. And it's a shame, though, because Bayley and Charlotte have shown a lot of chemistry with each other, especially during NXT. And this is a point I brought up to you, Jeff. I said, do you feel like the women right now are kind of dipping down a little bit? I feel like the execution in promos has kind of dwindled down. I feel the execution in the ring specifically, which is what I see most, has kind of, the execution has been kind of sloppy, and it just feels like, I wouldn't say they're working their hardest, but I think maybe they're trying to do a little too much where it's not as crisp as it once was.
I think it's a little of everything, and the promos hurt it too. You know, you were talking to me before and saying, is this same Bayley from NXT? She seemed a little more crisper in NXT, you know? It's like they're holding back. Might be a reason too, but you know, if I take a look at Bayley, I love the character. I love it. It just, for some reason, something's missing. And I don't know whether, you know, I don't know if Bayley's, you know, regressed a little bit or it's been, you know, pulled the reins back a little bit. But, you know, if you took a look at Sasha Banks and Bayley on Raw and you try to, you know, I know it's going to be tough to compare NXT TakeOver Brooklyn, the first one, you know, and that stellar match that they had. But it just seems like it was like, you know, many moons ago, you know, it just does not look like the same.
Yeah, it feels like ages ago when that happened. Definitely.
Yeah, it seemed like the same program. So, and it's just everyone, too. I don't know what it is. I don't know what's missing. Maybe it's just us or we're not seeing it, but I don't know, man. It's like, it's hard to explain. I really can't put a finger on it, but the promos, I think it's just weird when Sasha talks. It sounds like she's – I don't know whether it's stuffy or not. I don't know. It sounds like – you know when Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, when he had the – when he put on the brown nose or the red nose, he was like, oh, good, you know? It just sounded – she just sounds like she's stuffed up. Right? You know what I'm talking about, right?
Everybody yeah, no, but we're kind of dating ourselves here now with Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer unless people watch that during the holiday season. But no, I get your point, though.
And then Bailey, just her promos are like, oh, my God. I mean, just – all right, let's – you know, we know how much wrestling means to you. We get the point.
You know what it really feels more like anything? I can't stand it when the women are talking over each other. You and I talk over each other, but it's more natural because we're having a conversation here. When they talk over each other, what it really feels like more to me, Jeff, it feels like it's more scripted than anything now. It really feels like they're going out there and they're saying, okay, you say this line, and then after you're done this, I say this, and you have to hit your mark, which, you know, that's what you do in plays and movies and stuff like that, but they're not comfortable with it at all, and I'm not seeing them believing what they're saying. Because if it's true. Not, then they're repeating the same thing over and over again each time.
Yeah, it's just a lot of stuff. And then another thing, too, is like, wait a minute. Okay, Charlotte, you're a heel, right? You're crying every single time you lose. I mean, there's a point where, like,
okay, I'm sure Ric Flair cried every now and then when he lost.
I understand. But, man, the tear, like Sasha Banks, she beats Bayley, right? She was there last year. Okay, it was her first WrestleMania. I get it. Now you're going to cry looking up at the sign because you made it to the triple. Oh, my God.
I got to tell you one thing, too, Jeff.
If you want to be taken seriously, you cry about every little thing. I mean, come on.
I got to tell you one thing, Jeff. I'm sick and tired of that sign. I really am. Every single time you see SmackDown, Raw, you see the pay-per-views like Fastlane or Elimination Chamber, which is the one previous to that for SmackDown Live, every single time it's the pointing to the sign, it's the camera. I know it's for television, I get it.
They paid a fortune for the sign, I guess. You know,
they paid a fortune for it. I mean, my God, can't you just like look at the hard camera and say, I'm, you know, put the, you know, the title around your waist type of thing? Can you give me that?
It's become overdone. It's like the fan reactions now.
Yeah, which I know you can't stand.
It's funny. Somebody put a meme on Twitter where the sign actually acknowledges the wrestler back. So the sign points
that's awesome.
Points back to the wrestler. So I mean, so many smart people out there in the Twitter universe.
And not enough hours in a day for you and I to do that as well. But
one day we'll have the time to do memes all day. But
with Fastlane though, there was one bright spot though: the Cruiserweight Championship match with Neville.
I gotta say, man,
that was really good.
Really did a great job. Jack Gallagher did a great job.
Both men did a phenomenal job.
Probably best match of the night, in my opinion.
It was. To me, it stole the show.
And this is the thing we're talking about, the cruiserweights. Remember we were talking about, you know, I throw
Yeah, they've been struggling. Yeah, you've been talking about what they can do to kind of get themselves out of this rut.
Yeah, and then we're thinking, you know what, I think they needed names. I think Austin Aries coming in, as we saw Monday night, him being the, you know, future challenger for the title against Neville, that's going to be insanely great. So I think you needed a couple names, you know, and we were talking about, you remember Malenko and Rey Mysterio Jr. when they fought at the Clash of Champions, and, you know, we can see them do all those kind of crazy spots and stuff.
Yeah.
I think that's what's missing. I think you just let them wrestle. Give them, God knows, Raw runs over so much. Give them a good 10 minutes, you know, like they've been doing last time. I think they had Rich Swann and Neville actually go over two segments, I think, on this past Raw. Let's see that, you know what I mean? And let's just do some, you know, it doesn't have to be all the time, but you do some sick moves in the beginning and just get the crowd into it, because I think the crowd, even though Chicago is getting really into it, so I think let the wrestling do the talking and see what happens, because I think that's a solution. Plus, you have names like Austin Aries and Neville now, and I think that division could be, you know, salvageable. Actually, for the first time in a long time, the last, you know, week or so, I kind of, you know, felt a positive vibe from the Cruiserweight division. I mean, they just got to have more, you know, I guess it was the names kind of, because I don't think we were familiar with the TJ Perkins. I think Jack Gallagher really did a good job getting the fans involved, but you still got guys like Norm Dar. And
To work on creating themselves and getting themselves noticed. Yeah, you're completely right. But again, a guy like Neville, who's anchoring that division, is great right now, because at least you're doing something with a talent like him. And now Austin Aries.
Give Neville credit too, man.
Yeah.
I mean, this has just done a great job for his career, and I think he's really taken to
like
being
the beard too.
Yeah, the whole heel thing. He's done a great job, and again, good for Austin Aries. Now he's you know, looks like he's medically cleared not to come back. It looks like he'll be challenging Neville, hopefully.
And you know, those two are going to push each other a lot. Those two are going to push each other at WrestleMania.
Yeah, exactly. And we're talking about how, like, Neville hasn't even shown you 1/10 of what he can do. he's still got so much to show, and hope they're going to put on a show, man. That's going to be a show stealer. Hopefully they put on the Mania card, not on the pre-show, but you know we'll find out. It's still a long ways away now until WrestleMania, but that was a matchup. And then, of course, the one everyone's talking about is Roman Reigns and Braun Strowman, Bri. This is
the highlight of that event, Jeff, was basically seeing Roman Reigns wearing his Jordans. That's it. Maybe I have something different from Roman Reigns. I was completely 100% down, not to the fact that Roman Reigns won, because, hey, you know, we've gone through the era of John Cena, Jeff, and now we're going to go through the era of Roman Reigns because a lot of people like him, and I love to get Jody's take on Roman Reigns. What?
Whether we want to or not.
Exactly. That's my very bad British accent. But, like, again, I want to get Jody's opinion on this, too, what he thinks about Roman Reigns, because he's been a very polarizing figure as well. We're going to see this. What I was upset with, I didn't think it should have happened. I mean, it's not about booking, but I thought Undertaker, perfect timing to bring Undertaker in at that event. But I guess they wanted to save it for Raw. So can't blame them there. At least we saw the Undertaker.
Yeah, but again, this is a perfect example where WWE does a great job in pushing Braun Strowman for the last month or two. And then all of a sudden, in the span of a 20-minute match, they kind of kill it. You know?
Yeah, but their thing is going to be they want to make Roman Reigns look strong going into facing the Undertaker. If you had him get beat by Braun Strowman, then, you know, what more do you have in terms of, you know, he's not on a roll. He's basically been beaten by everybody, especially a guy as big as the Undertaker. So I guess they want to do it more for, you know, to stay face. But again, like you said, it kills the momentum, in my opinion. It could be easily forgotten, but it kind of kills a little bit of the momentum that Braun Strowman had. Yeah,
did they honestly think, though, that Roman Reigns beating Braun Strowman by making Roman look stronger, do you think at all that does anything for the crowd rooting for Roman Reigns against The Undertaker?
Apparently
that
not, because on Raw they were chanting, "You suck."
He is, and even though the Chicago crowd, which is a smart crowd, even though there is no way Roman Reigns is going to end up looking like anything than the bad guy in this, because Undertaker is, again, the nostalgic favorite. He is.
There's only one Razor Ramon, Jeff, and he's the real bad guy.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, again, it's kind of weird when the WWE, are they just not thinking? Do they really think that that's going to help Roman Reigns in his matchup with Undertaker, that he's going to get, you know, cheered on? I highly doubt it. I highly doubt that anyone is going to be rooting for Roman Reigns against The Undertaker.
And now what a lot of people were anticipating, especially the Chicago crowd, which was the birthplace of Y2J, seeing Chris Jericho come out first time as a babyface now, he's turned, and he's still using his old gimmicks and old catchphrases, which the crowd is eating up now, especially that he's a babyface. Now that's okay to cheer for him. And, you know, let me just stop for 1 second, Jeff, and just say, you know, this just showcases to me, and I kissed Chris Jericho's ass a lot on this show, but not voluntarily, because I'm hoping, you know, Chris Jericho becomes my best friend, you know, like Kevin Owens.
But he needs one now.
He needs one now, right? Who knows? Maybe we can all, you know, Chris, I'm here, man, drink it in. But it just shows you how talented he is and how very rare a talent like Chris Jericho is, from all the experience he's had through all the years he's been in the business, but also his innate talent having the it factor, but also being able to reinvent himself and being very creative, not afraid to take a chance, because his character has been so cemented that he could do anything at this point and he wouldn't hurt his legacy.
Yeah, I mean, I wish he would have come out with the list and been like, the only person on it now is you, Kevin Owens. But, you know, again, he's able to draw the crowd back to him. So now he's the baby face going into WrestleMania, as it will go to the long and winding road to WrestleMania.
For the U.S. title.
For the U.S. title. So, yeah.
What do you think of the confrontation between the two of them? The explanation?
Yeah, it's pretty good. I just, like I said, I told you, man, I just wish Chris Jericho would have had that spotlight on him on his own. Mm-hmm. A little bit more intense promo. But, you know, I see, you know, I like where they're going with Chris Jericho. Listen, I bet you Chris Jericho had full control of that segment and what wanted to be, you know, done and said. And then, you know, of course, the whole Samoa Joe, is he aligned with Kevin Owens? We're going to find out. I think there's going to be some kind of alliance there. But Samoa Joe, come on, past history, you got to know. Kevin Owens is going to turn on you eventually. So we'll see what happens there. Sami Zayn helped out. So, you
maybe
know,
it's a new formation of the Authority. Who knows? We've always been speculating that as well.
Maybe. So, yeah, at a KO, Samoa Joe, possible alliance. Maybe it'll form sometime after WrestleMania. So maybe Triple H formed before. So we'll find out, too. Then, of course, will Seth Rollins be at Mania? I think he will. Triple H, cut another promo, and you know, took some shots at CM Punk there. I don't know if you noticed it.
Yeah.
Kind of like, you know, with the doctors, we have the world's best doctors, and hopefully Seth Rollins takes the advice. And he said, mentioned the best in the world, and I think he took some digs at it at the CM Punk, knowing they're in Chicago. And I think, hey, listen, looking forward to it. I kind of think the whole Seth Rollins thing is kind of a work. I don't think he's that injured. You know, so I think we will see Seth Rollins and Triple H at WrestleMania. So I think that was well done. And then, of course, everyone's talking about, you know, Austin Aries and Neville. That match looks to happen at WrestleMania. So yeah. We discussed that.
And it was just really, really intriguing because I really feel like the Cruiserweight division needs that kick in the butt in terms of to show the audience and show the universe, no pun intended, because I'm not trying to copy what the WWE says. But it needs that type of high card, high marquee match. And we have Neville and Austin Aries. They're going to showcase that.
Yeah, and I think this could be a turning point in that division, the Cruiserweight division. So hopefully that happens. Of course, you know, Brock Lesnar, the first shots fired by Brock Lesnar. And you know what?
He finally got to F5 Bill Goldberg,
Jeff. I wonder how Goldberg felt after that. I wish I was a fly on the wall and I could find out just how Bill Goldberg
actually felt. Dude, did you see him afterwards? First of all, he was perspiring like crazy. It's like somebody get him a towel. I know, you mentioned that. You wish you could sweat that much, right?
I wish I could sweat that much, yeah.
It's ridiculous. And he's not doing anything. He's just talking. He's just sweating that much. That's why he's probably been able to stay in such great shape. But he gets the F5 and he gets up. He's a dripping pool of perspiration, man. And you could tell he didn't like it. First of all, like he didn't realize – it didn't look like he realized it was going to happen to him because he was still holding on to the title as he was on top of Brock Lesnar's shoulders. But, yeah, it was not a very nice landing for Bill Goldberg. I don't remember the last time he's ever gotten one of those. That was WrestleMania 20, so it's been a long time. But, you know, if you're the fans, you're like, finally, Brock Lesnar was able to do one offensive move on Bill Goldberg. But right now you hope the after effects aren't really hurting Bill Goldberg too much.
You heard what our buddy Taz said. Taz, our buddy from the Taz Show, actually said that Paul Heyman might have had his whole finger on that segment. He says that Paul is the guy that values the title, so basically saying that Bill Goldberg held on to that title as long as he could and then dropped it, because if you noticed, Goldberg went on to crawl for that title and grasp it again, showing the importance. It's those subtle hints that Taz is talking about, which I think was pretty cool because I want to hear somebody's opinion on that. And I think that was a good thing that I didn't see because – you did notice Goldberg was reaching for that title afterwards, so maybe it's the importance of that title and how he held on to it to the very last split second till he couldn't. So I think that was pretty cool. And I think, again,
in my opinion, though, Jeff, I got to be honest with you, and I would say this to Taz, where we're speaking to him, I would say it straight to his face. I think you're really reaching if you're looking for those subtleties, because people, you know, people get on me, and I'm sure Taz gets on other people too when he's like, oh man, you're talking about all these subtleties, whatever. I'm sure the general audience isn't looking at that subtlety because, you know, the general audience, the die hardcores, know Brock and Bill Goldberg in their history. The general audience doesn't see that, and I'm sure they're not paying attention to him crawling. So those inner messages, I get where Taz is coming from. I'm getting your point. But I really think if you're going to that extent, then you're really reaching for it because I don't think they're really trying to be that dramatic. I could see in a Chris Jericho, Kevin Owens rivalry, those little intricacies that they're playing there, but not in this rivalry. To me, this rivalry is far beyond artistic.
But, Brian, you're not hearing me. I'm telling you, Paul Heyman was the one behind that. So Paul Heyman's going to be detailed because he values the championship. So it's those subtleties that we don't expect to see it that you're like, oh, wow. It's, for example, like
– No, I heard what you said, Jeff. I'm just saying that it's not going to bring anything more to this match. I get the message that Paul is trying to get across and how Taz explained it and how you're explaining it to me. But I'd be like, wow, you're really reaching. If you're Paul Heyman, you're really reaching for it because, at least in my opinion, this thing isn't really selling. I mean, they're going to buy tickets to see it, but to me, this doesn't sound like it should be. It should be a rubber match. That should be the most important thing. Who gets the last one between these two?
I'm going to give credit for Bill Goldberg to trying and taking order if that's, you know, that's how Paul Heyman wanted it. So,
okay.
And then, of course, the show ends with Undertaker chokeslamming Roman Reigns.
Yes.
If Jerry Lawler was there, you know he's going to say it, right? It's like the young lion when he challenges the old lion.
Yes.
And then that lion goes and he doesn't lay down for that other lion.
And then he goes sleeps with the younger lion's wife. And now the young lion wants to get revenge on the old lion. Whatever. You know, it's the same spiel.
So, I mean, Undertaker, Roman Reigns, again, we mentioned
it's Darwinism at its best.
Yeah, there is no way that Roman Reigns is going to be cheered on or he's going to be the babyface in this. This is the Undertaker. Everyone's going to be behind the Undertaker. And dear God, if there was any time for the WWE to make this man a heel, it's now.
I like your enthusiasm there, dear God.
Because he's got to beat The Undertaker within an inch of his life in order to get that heel thing. I mean, to me, that's the grand saving thing. Because if he beats Undertaker, do you think people are going to cheer him the next night because he's the man that basically may have ended The Undertaker?
No, because if he beats The Undertaker, Roman's going to have to be running for his life because they're going to riot in Florida if that happens. But it's going to happen. So, you know, what's the point of griping about it, Jeff? We know that's the direction they're trying to do. To me, I would like to believe, Jeff, they're not naive enough to think that, hey, Roman Reigns is going to beat The Undertaker. Yay, now the people are going to like him a lot. Now they're going to be cheering him. No, if they do this and don't turn him into a heel, then to me it's just like them really not listening to the audience at all. Which is fine. They don't have to. I mean, we're still buying into it, so they don't have to listen to us.
So, you know, Raw kind of revved it up, you know, with the show kind of.
Let's talk about the real show, the A show, Jeff. Let's talk about SmackDown Live, man.
I know. We're going to get to SmackDown. Yeah. And listen, again,
this Raw
continues
stuff.
To outclass. It continues to outclass. SmackDown continues to outclass Raw, and there's no ands, ifs, or buts about it, man. Another great show. And, you know, what I like about it is, without getting, you know, too detailed into everything that went on, it's just edgier. It uses storylines, current storylines in people's lives, in the personal lives, and they use it. And that's how you build off of stuff. Here I am a week ago saying that The Miz was castrated and there's no way he can recover. And The Miz totally redeems himself on Talking Smack and also, you know, beforehand. And I think Maryse had the best line of the night when she throws the mic at Nikki Bella and she says, you know, and she calls her a bitch, basically, you know? I think that was awesome.
Yeah, I didn't know really Maryse was saying because of her accent, which, hey, I'm not attacking Maryse on. She's got a beautiful accent. I could hear it all day, but didn't really know what she was saying. I think she was saying, break that, bitch.
Break that, bitch, right?
Yeah, I think that's what she meant to say.
So it was great, man. It was great. I did not think that there was any way that Miz and Maryse could get the last laugh, and they did. And I did not think they were going to go there with some of the stuff that The Miz said, you know? The whole having a contract to be your girlfriend, the way, you know, and a lot of people think that's some of, not only is that some truth to it, but there's also the talk that, you know, that the whole Cena Nikki Bella thing is kind of to, you know, market their brand. So there is talk in the locker room, you know, the back talk in the locker room that goes on, and that there is some truth to what they think. That's a lot of what the locker room thinks about John Cena.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't be the one person to kind of really know that, and neither you and I. We can only make assumptions of that, but you're right. I mean, a lot of it's based on what a lot of people are talking about and all the rumor mills, and, you know, you never graduate high school because everybody's talking stuff about you. But to kind of piggyback off what you're saying, you're right. You know, SmackDown has completely outclassed and outclassed, like you said, Jeff, Raw in so many factors. And what I find so appealing, Jeff, from SmackDown Live, and, you know, I've seen you, I think you're watching it more now than you are Raw. I mean, you watch Raw because it's kind of it's what we always do. But I think SmackDown Live has really drawn my attention because I've covered it for, you know, writing for websites, and so you're now kind of watching it more. But the main thing I love about it, like you said, it's realism. But I love the fact that the wrestling becomes so predictable at times, and when you mix in real life situations where the characters are kind of masked and you're no longer seeing colors like black and white, but you're seeing colors of gray, it becomes so much more exciting because it reminds me of the Monday Night Wars, and stay with me for 1 second here. When it goes
I'll
to the
try,
point
man.
Where
getting long-winded on
when it gets to the point, well, maybe for you because your attention spans is of a gnat, but the thing is, when you look at something and say, wow, I know this is supposed to be real, but that wasn't supposed to happen. The whole Dolph Ziggler comment, the way John Cena would berate Miz, like, I'm here to talk about The Undertaker. I don't want to stand here in front of you. I love those things because they're shots at each other, but it's the spirit of competition. So I love that. Kudos to the writing team, or kudos to whoever's in charge. They're giving the superstars or the wrestlers the ability to be more real, to take those chances.
I think it's Road Dogg, man. I think Road Dogg's really doing a good job.
Yeah, it's amazing. Kudos to him if that's the case. But again, so much more realism on SmackDown Live, and so much more personal and so much heated the storylines than you would get on Raw. So to me, I love that, the difference. And that's why SmackDown to me is the A show.
And then, of course, Alexa Bliss will defend the title at WrestleMania against basically everybody that's on the women's roster.
This has happened before with AJ Lee.
Yeah, who's ever available now will take on Alexa Bliss. And listen, it doesn't matter who Alexa Bliss is taking on. She deserves to walk into WrestleMania as the women's champion.
Definitely.
I know the heartfelt sentiment was towards Naomi, but Alexa Bliss is, without a shadow of a doubt, the best, and I know you're going to say Becky Lynch. You have a
I'll admit it,
soft spot for the last kicker.
I don't have a soft spot. I have, you know, I'm in love with Becky Lynch. No, the thing is, Jeff, I completely will agree with you on this. Let you know how much you and I don't really agree on these certain things. But again, I'll give you 100% credit. Alexa Bliss is the best female, I would say, on both brands right now.
Yeah, I would. It would not be far-fetched.
Not at all. She's sure the best in promos. She's the best
Alexa
in the ring.
Alexa Bliss would destroy Charlotte in a promo.
Yeah. Oh, she would destroy. Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. That would be.
She would be left shaking in her boots,
yes.
Man. It's
great point. I'm going to leave it there. You finish it, Jeff.
Yeah. And then Mickie James turned on Alexa Bliss. It was.
Go back to how Alexa Bliss would destroy Charlotte. Just go back to that real quick.
Alexa Bliss would destroy Charlotte in a promo, in a one-on-one, face-to-face. If they were ever to fight for a title, Alexa Bliss would make Charlotte her bitch.
And that pause there is just Jeff dropped the mic. That's all it is right there. But no, yeah, perfect point, man. Perfect point.
And of course, Mickie James turns on Alexa Bliss because, hey, you know what? The title means more than friendships. And so that's going to be interesting to see. And, you know, it's like you're more invested in the females on SmackDown. You know, even Natty is growing on me a little bit. She's kind of, you know, off kilter, but still it's fun. And, of course, you know, Becky Lynch. And then you have, just to me, a very talented women's roster.
Well, here's the one thing that I just want to add in real quick, Jeff. Yeah, you're right. A very talented women's roster. But each woman, you're talking about Natty. Let's even throw Carmella in there. At least they have a story. They have some type of an identity. You know who they are. Even Naomi. I mean, if you didn't like the glow thing, all right, that's one thing. But again, she had somewhat of an identity. I can identify and know the characters of who these people are more than I can in the women on Raw. Like, I don't really know
who
Naomi.
And that's when you have names.
Exactly.
We have established names like Sasha and Bayley. And yet, the females on SmackDown can out-promo any girl on the Raw roster.
Definitely, definitely.
They're more polished than the girls on the Raw roster, and I will love the next few weeks when we get guests on to bring that up. So that's definitely what I want to, you know, bring up with them too. And of course, Brian, something that's also doesn't get brought up a lot, but I think is a little bit compelling, even though it's kind of like not sandwiched in between everything, but kind of like put to the back burner. The whole Baron Corbin Dean Ambrose thing, I think it's been silently compelling. I totally think that I think just with the whole AJ stuff and just gets getting lost in the shuffle. But I think that that's also a good rivalry that they're really doing a good job leading into what will most likely be a intercontinental title match between Baron Corbin and Dean Ambrose.
It's a wild card there. Dean Ambrose has been an established star for quite a bit now, Jeff, and they definitely have high regards for Baron Corbin. I still don't see it. I still don't relate to him as much, but I'm not going to, you know, demean him or anything like that because, you know, he's been given opportunities and I think he's been very successful in those opportunities as well. So, you know, it wouldn't shock me if there would be an Intercontinental Championship match between the two of these. And hey, Baron Corbin, he's being given the ball right now to an extent and he's doing nothing right now, but silently in my mind, hitting little home runs here and there. So, hey, credit to Baron Corbin right now because the WWE believes in him. He definitely believes in himself from the promos he does, especially on, and this is why you mentioned before, Talking Smack is such a great show because we're getting to know a little bit more of Baron Corbin, not as fast or quickly, but we're getting to know a little bit more about him. He's a guy who kind of tells you like it is, and he's not afraid to, you know, hurt anybody's feelings or worried about anything.
He's a jerk.
And he's proud of it.
That's what. Yeah, I know. So, yeah. I mean, it comes off of it, too. So, I think...
Just like you're a jerk.
I was about to call you a jerk, and you beat me to it. Ah, man, it's like you can mind read me. I was about to say, hey, you should know how it feels like...
It's a mind warped you, Jeff. I just mind warped you.
You did, man. You beat me to the punch there. But, and then also, basically, AJ Styles and Shane McMahon came to a boiling point. Hey, listen, if I was AJ Styles... And here's the thing, right? They're trying to make Shane McMahon the face and everything like that, but everyone loves AJ Styles. Everyone believes he's getting screwed over. And the smart wrestling fan is going to get on the side of AJ Styles. Even as much as I love Daniel Bryan, the fact that they've made AJ Styles go through all these hoops, basically, it should be a triple threat match, but Randy Orton now gets the opportunity to go to WrestleMania to take on Bray Wyatt for the WWE Championship, and AJ Styles left in the cold. To what most likely, as we've seen on Talking Smack, will lead to a matchup against Shane McMahon.
To me, Jeff, it's more frustration. You and I can relate to it. You know why? And I'm sure a lot of people can relate to what AJ Styles is going through. How many times have we all been doing something and we feel like we're working hard and we're doing what we're supposed to be doing and we're jumping through hoops, as AJ says it, right? And then that one person gets ahead of you and that one person gets that shot that you worked so hard for and you've proven you could do it. and just annoys the crap out of you to the point where you just explode. And that's what happened with AJ. And that, you know, again, talking about realism, that looked really real and looked really good. So well SmackDown done. Live is well doing done. A great job at that kind of stuff. But you know, if you're a fan right now, you gotta have to have some type of resentment towards not only Shane but Daniel Bryan as well. And Daniel Bryan mentioned during Talking Smack where he's like, "I don't know why he's so mad at Shane because I kind of really put this match together." But here's the difference, Daniel, because you can't wrestle him right now, not because you can't. It's because they won't allow you to. And that's the main thing. Because honestly, it should be AJ being mad at Daniel Bryan. At the same time, because Daniel Bryan makes the decision and makes the matches. It should ultimately have been, Jeff, like you said. To me, if Randy Orton wanted to get his opportunity back after he gave it away on television in front of the world, and AJ was the rightful number one contender, then it should have been a match between AJ and Randy Orton for Randy Orton to get the opportunity to fight for the title and not kick AJ out. That's the way I would have done it. I'm not a huge fan of triple threat matches.
I just would have made it a triple threat just because it gets AJ Styles to headline. And if you think about it, and if you
would have been a more compelling storyline to have that match regardless.
If you do it in the fairest way, I think it would have been a triple threat match. But again, I'll admit I'm not a fan of the triple threat match, but that would have been the most fair thing to do. Because now you're going to get backlash from the AJ Styles fans because honestly, you look at it, I'm more heated at Shane McMahon and Daniel Bryan. And before we head now to Jody McDonald, before with Jody Mac, the return of the Mac, Daniel Bryan said something very interesting on Talking Smack when The Miz was talking to him and they mentioned something about he couldn't compete because of his head. And he goes, "It's, you know, the WWE kind of is not allowing him to." He says, "We'll see in a year and a half." Interesting little note there. I don't know if he added that himself, but could you see Daniel Bryan, knowing that he has a child on the way, knowing that he's a married man, he's going to be a family man soon, could you see Daniel Bryan risk it and actually have a match outside of the WWE?
Yes, I can. And again, you throw those factors in.
A farewell match? One match? More than one? Like,
I don't know. You would think at this point in his mind, he would like to say, "I want to have one more match to prove to myself or to prove to the world that I'm okay and I can do it." But how many more after that, I don't know. But yeah, I feel Daniel Bryan will have another match. He's only 35 years old. So by the time his contract ends, he'll be 36, 37. You're still in the prime of your career. I still think he wants it. Not because you throw the whole family thing. He's got a child on the way, his wife, blah, blah, blah. I get it. But Jeff, how many times do people find themselves in that scenario and somebody's giving you a shot and opportunity? I know when you're a parent, it's not about you anymore. It's about the child. It's about the family. But for him, he still wants this. This is part of who he is. So if he has a chance to do one more match, at least he'll do it. But it won't be in the WWE ring.
If it could do possible damage?
We don't know that because all the doctors, Daniel Bryan's even said it himself, Jeff, during interviews, where some of the doctors have said this and some of the doctors have said that. He's gone to five specialists and they've cleared him and okayed him. He went to another guy and he said, "Well, maybe not so much." Everybody has an opinion. Ultimately, it becomes your choice.
But the WWE guy won't clear him.
Never clear him. But at the same time, Jeff, we understand there could be some issues. If he gets knocked in the head and gets another concussion, what could happen? Because he described he was dealing with seizures. I get it, Jeff. I understand all that. But who are we to say you shouldn't do it?
Regardless. Not saying you shouldn't. I would just really be scratching my head with the point he is in his life right now for him to risk it. And listen, I'm sure there'll be promoters lined up, you know.
See, that's where we don't understand that because we're not athletes like them.
Athletes, but I'm sure there's promoters that will be lined up out the door to get this match with Daniel Bryan and somebody, right?
Yeah.
But I would really have – it would really be on my conscience for me to promote – to be a promoter and sign Daniel Bryan and knowing something could happen. It's just me. It just is the risk worth the reward, you know? That's basically where I stand on that. Yeah, so that was just interesting, you know, for him to say that. But yeah, time will tell. But you know what? We got a great interview with Jody McDonald from WFAN, WIP in Philly, Sirius XM Radio. Man, this was awesome to get with him to sit down and talk about, you know, WrestleMania. We were in WrestleMania season, and you know, this is a guy that a lot of people don't know started out with a wrestling show on The Fan. Brian, could you imagine trying to get wrestling on, you know, on any platform at that time? People had to be, especially in New York, they've been like, "You gotta be kidding me." And now you see shows, you know our show, you see our the guys that we interview with their podcasts. Now wrestling has become like, you know, it's everywhere. You know, you have Taz do his post shows after WrestleMania and after, you know, the big four events. And so, you know, he's very ahead of his time. And we sat down with Jody Mack. We talked about WrestleMania. But we were able to also talk to him about the very beginnings of his wrestling show and whether we thought he was somebody, a personality ahead of his time. And this is what he had to say. All right, this one's a fun interview for me because I've grown up listening to this voice and kind of great to be able to chance to talk to him. And
stop fanboying, Jeff, please.
Hey, listen, man, I grew up on The Fan and, you know, I listened to him on the weekends and late nights. And I got to admit, man, I'm excited on this one, man. And he knows wrestling, too. So I'm excited to have Jody McDonald on. You can hear him on WFAN and WIP in Philly, also on SiriusXM Radio. Jody Mack, how you doing today, man?
Other than the fact that you guys are making me feel really old, I'm pretty damn good.
Hey, that's all on Jeff. A very impressive resume, though, Jody.
I'm not trying to hate you, Jody, but I'm just going to tell you how big a fan of I am of you. So enough with the ass kissing. How are you, Jody? How's everything?
I'm very good. What are you guys up to?
Nothing much, well, Jody.
It's WrestleMania season, Jody. That's what it is.
Right.
Yeah, again, the All-Stars on the podcast so that we can talk some WrestleMania, but first and foremost, Jody, when you look back and on your wrestling show on The Fan and you think of all the wrestling right now in podcasts and shows, and especially, you know, the Taz show that comes on CBS now after some of the major events like the Survivor Series, WrestleMania, Royal Rumble, SummerSlams, do you think your show was a little bit ahead of its time?
Well, I don't know if ahead of its time would be the way I'd describe it, but I would say there are two things that I'm proud of. Way back in the late 80s, which is now a long time ago, yours truly had two little sidecar issues, call them what you want, niche segments that we would do, which were the Wrestling Hour with my good buddy Rich Mancuso. And I was also ahead of the curve on fantasy baseball. That back in the 80s, you didn't have such a thing as the internet. You couldn't get a box score on your telephone, on your iPhone, as the game was ongoing. You had to wait for the newspaper to show up the next morning. Otherwise, you didn't know what you guys did. Well, we had the wires, the Associated Press, at the radio station, so I would get a box score maybe a half an hour after the game was over and done with. Now you have it 30 seconds later on your tablet or your computer or whatever else. So what I used to do then wouldn't fly now. There wasn't a necessity for it. But I would actually read the box scores because I knew there were a ton of fantasy baseball players out there that, like me, that loved their stuff, that sat and waited, and you can't listen to every single game at the time, so you got to know how your guy did. And I would run it down for the folks. And I did it for a year and change, and it finally got voted off the show. I left it up to the listeners, and too many of them said, no, Jody, we just want to talk about the Jets and the Giants and the Mets and the Yankees. And, I got a fantasy team, but I can wait to see my newspaper in the morning. So I stopped doing it after about a year and a half. But people who were into it, who were fantasy sports fans, loved it and ate it up. And damn, you look at the daily sports fantasy stuff and the money that those companies are making for people who play on a day-in, day-out basis. It just boomed to no end. And yeah, I was a little bit ahead on the curve on that one. So yeah, I'll take some credit that I saw a couple things coming down the pike ahead of time.
Yeah, definitely ahead of your time because, like you said back then, social media being the way it is right now, everybody can get something in 30, 15 seconds as opposed to then you actually had to wait. And I think more people had patience except the viewers that wanted just to listen to the Jets and Giants and complain about that and the Yankees. But my question for you, Jody, is that, like Jeff mentioned, coming up with this concept to talk about wrestling, even back then in the early 90s, 80s, a lot of people kind of treated it as taboo. I mean, how did those discussions come to approach and say, hey, I want to do an hour during the overnight, around 2 or 3 in the morning, whatever, I want to talk about wrestling. How did that come about?
Oh, well, I made the call, and I decided that I thought that it was worthy of an hour each and every single week. I had to sell my boss on it, and I'd love to give my boss credit and say they were forward-thinking, and they opened their mind to it, and they allowed me to do it because they saw wrestling and the boom it was going to hit at some point. I really don't believe that. I just think it was like, Jody, it's 3 o'clock in the morning on Saturday night. As long as you're not cursing on the air, as long as you're not costing the radio station its license, you can talk about whatever the hell you want to talk about. And if you think wrestling's good enough, go ahead. Do what you want to do. And they cut me slack. Don't take me wrong. I was quite appreciative of it. But, yeah, it was pretty much my call. I thought people would enjoy it. the guy that I had on, Richie Mancuso, was well connected, and he got us a couple good guests over the year, and he followed it with a bigger fervor than I did. So it sounded like a good idea at the time. We ran with it for 2+ years.
So now, like you said, social media is crazy. The platform now, you can get your information in like just a matter of seconds. And just imagine now, though, would you have had any interest, though, like since she wasn't your like baby and it was kind of like, you know, like Rich Mancuso and he was on the connections. Now you look at shows like the Taz Show and you take a look at podcasts like ourselves. Like, where do you think the future of wrestling is going? And like, do you still follow it?
Oh, it's the future of wrestling is great. Vince McMahon is a business genius. He has cornered the market. He has made his product the one that you have to have when you're a wrestling fan. He's been able to take basically independent wrestling shows. And at a time 15, 20 years ago, it was still a decent business that you could be in and get a pretty good crowd and make some money if you were a promoter and or a wrestler. That's not the case now. Vince has got a corner on the market, so I give him all the credit in the world for what he's done. His network has been a success, and I think it's only got room to grow. I think they brought it out well and handled it well with not gouging people to start and basically giving them the pay-per-views for free. If you pay what most people would pay for anyway, even if you had to pay for the pay-per-views on top of it, the diehard wrestling fan is going to pay the minimum amount that Vince asks for, 24 hours of programming a day, 365 days a year. So I think he's done a phenomenal job at making wrestling the business that it is. Does it have room for growth? Will it get bigger? Will it get better? Maybe. I'm not sure. But I don't think Vince is going out of business anytime soon. And if he just keeps the status quo for the next 10 or 15 years, he's going to retire as a very rich man.
You made a great point, Jody, about Vince McMahon being a genius. And basically, all the success of the WWE has really been on his broad shoulders, where he's kind of carried it through the 80s and 90s. And now at this at this stage, and doesn't seem to be slowing down anytime soon. I mean, the guy's nearly 70 and he's still going strong. But with that being said, when you have a situation like that, would it be like similar to sports sometimes where you feel like maybe the person who's running it, whether it be an owner, general manager, kind of loses touch a little bit? Is the product kind of losing touch with maybe, I wouldn't say maybe the die hardcores, but just losing touch in terms of what it was built on to begin with, pro wrestling?
I'm not seeing evidence of that. I'm sure Vince detractors will go there, and there's always the he's too old to know what the young kids want. Well, Vince is, as you said, in his 60s when they put the WWE Network together. So I'm sure it wasn't all Vince's ideas, and he didn't put everything into place. He surrounded himself with good people. He's got good people to work underneath him. And although I've been told, and I've never had the pleasure, but know enough people that have who've either interviewed him or worked for him, worked underneath him, Vince is your basic mega million-dollar corporate head egomaniac. That to do something like that, to have a position like that, you basically have to have that kind of an ego. But apparently, Vince, if he's got one, he knows when to reel it in, he knows how to keep it in check, and he knows when to delegate to others to make sure his business keeps going exactly the way it has for decades.
Talking with Jody Mack, any thoughts of ever doing another wrestling show again, or is that just something that you just close the door on?
I'd never close the door on anything, but...
like a true pro wrestler, never say never.
Yeah, never.
Because Jody, I always hear Evan say that you're talking wrestling with the guys, you know, during the breaks and stuff like that. So
yes.
I'm sure something you guys could think of something, and you guys probably would have a hit on your hands.
We could, but I'm perfectly fine now with taking an off the cuff wrestling call every once in a while. If somebody brings it up, yes, Evan probably brings it up more on his show on The Fan than I do on mine. But if somebody happens to bring it up here, me and Evan discuss it something about it, oh, I'll take the call. I'm not going to tell someone, no, we're not talking wrestling because it's 3:00 in the afternoon. No, it's fun. If I get a call from my boss and he said it took 3 wrestling calls that hour and the most I want is one, well, then I'll skim it back.
I'll
not look to rustle any feathers, but unless you're doing an overnight type show or the day of a big show. Like Evan will talk about it on the day of a big pay-per-view. If he's on Saturday, yeah, like a huge pay-per-view on Sunday, then he'll bring it up. He's not doing it at 11:30 on a Wednesday when he's sitting in studio with Beningo. So it's got to fit the time. It's got to be the right time. I'll still talk about it, but I don't know if I'm ever going to do a long-form show the way I once did.
Well, you know, that's just a shame, and now you've just kind of teared the hearts of all our listeners because they want to hear it again.
Sorry about that.
That's all right. It's part of the business, unfortunately, right? But speaking of that, I mean, like I mentioned before, Jody, it's WrestleMania season, so everybody gets really excited, whether it be the die hardcores or the, you know, the casual fan that comes in. You know, this is basically, I like to think the Super Bowl copied WrestleMania in terms of, you know, the allure and the media attention that goes around it. Obviously, Super Bowl sports gets a little bit more attention, but, you know, you look at WWE product, for example, you know, ESPN's covering it now. You know, people are actually commenting on it now. It's not much of the taboo in terms of these dumb Neanderthals butting heads. It's more, you know, as they say, quote unquote, sports entertainment. And looking towards WrestleMania, I mean, what we just currently saw is now Bill Goldberg, who's in his 50s now, is the WWE Universal Champion. I don't know how much you've been following that storyline, but does the nostalgia factor still have an impact, you think, in pro wrestling right now? Or would you say it's time for the younger guys to kind of move on because the WWE could kind of fall into the laps where they're depending too much on part-time wrestlers?
A great question, but first things first, I'll correct it. The Super Bowl was first.
I know.
and Vince was smart enough to see what kind of a success it was and said, how can I get an event that can rival that and get the kind of buzz that that gets? And, oh, by the way, he does it as well as the NFL. You're right. The WrestleMania is phenomenal. To be able to sell out a National Football League stadium is off the charts for that kind of an event on that kind of a surface. You've got a big field, football field, you should be able to sell that many.
Oh, yeah.
No, you can do it with a wrestling ring is just that I would have never believed when I was just starting out following wrestling, talking about it on the air in the 80s. If you had told me that they could sell out a 60,000, 70,000, 80-seat stadium, I'd say, you're getting carried away with yourself. Well, they do it.
Yeah, and so cities actually now bid for the event as well, similar to the Super Bowl.
Right.
Cities are bidding to have WrestleMania come to their town.
So give all the credit in the world to that for Vince. I don't think
he needs more credit, Jody. His ego's big enough.
Yeah, that's true. I'm okay, and I don't think we know all the details for WrestleMania. We can speculate on them and be able to figure what the big matches are going to be. If it's not Undertaker against Roman Reigns, I'll be shocked at this stage, but they haven't officially announced it yet, so some of this is speculatory. I think they're trying to strike a balance. The fact that they made Kevin Owens a champion as quickly as they did tells you that they've got an eye on the future, that they gave Finn Balor a championship as quickly as they did. It tells you they got an eye on the future. But when you're going to do something as big as WrestleMania, it can't just be about the young up-and-coming stars. You want to get that crossover audience, the audience that's been watching for 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 25, 30, 40, 50 years. And that's what they do when they bring back some of these older guys out of retirement, wrestle once or twice a year like The Undertaker. As long as there's a balance to the card, I think that's great. If you can serve two masters on one big pay-per-view, why wouldn't you do something like that? Goldberg was one of my faves when he was wrestling. To get into the kind of shape that he's in at the age that he's at is pretty phenomenal, considering he was out of wrestling for a long period of time. Either he kept his shape all that time and or worked really hard to get back into shape. He has not had a match of any length or any consequence, and don't look for him to be out there in a 20-minute marathon all-time match on WrestleMania. That's not going to happen. but I think they've done a good job prepping for it, telling the storyline leading up to it. I've got no problems of the balance between young and old.
Talking to Jody Mack, follow him on Twitter, at Jody McMahon. Jody, talking about, well, we're talking about WrestleMania, but, you know, a lot of people complain about, you know, Kevin Owens worked his butt off to become the champion, then he loses in about 21 seconds to Goldberg. The wrestling fan, like, we'll call him the smart mark is what we call him. Like, do you think, like, social media and the internet's kind of killed it for, like, the fan? Because, listen, WrestleMania 5, WrestleMania 4, we didn't have to worry about the internet. We didn't know the stories. We weren't as involved. But as we now head to this, everyone is so upset of the storylines. Is there ever a chance, or you think the innocence of watching wrestling now and not being focused on the storylines, you think that hinders something like that because the promoters now are like, well, you know, we have to appeal to the fans even more?
Well, a couple of things. Number one, the innocence of wrestling. Did you really use that phrase? There's no innocence to wrestling.
It's still real to him, Jody. It's still real to him.
There wasn't in 2007. There wasn't in 1987, and there wasn't in 1967. There's never been any innocence to wrestling.
For the bright-eyed kid that would watch it and be like, wow, you know, and not worry about, like, well, I don't like the way they're booking this guy. How could he lose? You know what I mean? Like, that to me is like, you know, not everyone's talking about that. Do you think it's taken away from actually, like, the in-ring performance where you can just watch it, like, you know, oh, and just appreciate it for what it is?
Well, that's a fair question when you put it that way because, yeah, even the 12 or 13-year-old.
Yeah, you saved yourself there, Jeff.
Get a website up and see someone talking about storylines and how they're dramatizing and not just watching it when it comes on the WWE Network. So, yeah, now I get the point you were trying to make. It is what it is. It's entertainment. And it is predetermined. It isn't may the best man win. It isn't a competition. It's a storyline, and it's acted out by tremendously athletic guys, and they do what they think will be best both in the moment and for future storytelling purposes down the line. I think they've done a good job over the last, you know, draw a line any way you want. Last 3 months, last 6 months, last year, last 2 years, last 5 years. Wherever you draw the line, there are times where there have been better storylines and decisions I liked and thought really worked and I was amazed by a match and I didn't see that coming. And there are other times where it's been blatantly predictable and I didn't agree with it and saw it coming and thought it was stupid and then they did it and it proved to me to be stupid. So the WWE, like regular sports, is up and down at peaks and valleys. I think they're sitting on a pretty good WrestleMania. Now, can the Undertaker find something left in the tank and put on a good show at Roman Reigns? I hope so. We all saw Owens and Y2K coming down the pike. Do I think they'll put on a pretty good match?
Whoa, 1 second, Joey. That's Y2J. Yeah, and if you don't watch your tone, I'm going to put you on the list, okay?
Oh, shoot, that's stupid. there's one for you. The list is stupid. It always has been stupid. It was stupid the entire time. Anytime they go back to it, stupid. There's an example of something that the WWE does that I don't agree with a little bit. I think Jericho and his list is stupid. But beside the point, he's still a pretty good wrestler. He puts on a good show, and they worked hard to get the storyline together. They dragged it as far as they thought they could, and they took it to WrestleMania. I think it'll be a good match. We all saw it coming. It was like, oh, my God, I can't believe Kevin Owens against Jericho. We all knew it. We saw this 9 months out. We saw it after their second bro hug that, okay, at some point they're going to turn them and they're going to go against each other. I think they did a good job selling it. I think they did a good job portraying it, but it wasn't like it was a surprise to anybody.
Well, I mean, speaking of guys like Y2J, Chris Jericho, until you shamelessly mispronounce his name there, Joey, let that one slide there for a bit. I'm not going to get too mad.
One letter. You're killing me for one letter.
It's an important letter, damn it. But, yeah. But again, talking about a guy like Chris Jericho, right, you're saying, yeah, there's still a few good matches left in him. And, you know, at this point in his career, he doesn't really have to do it. But I think when you really look at him in terms of if we're going to just isolate Chris Jericho, he's done a great job of always, continually, every single time he's come back or he's left for extended amount of time or the times have changed in society, he's done a great job at reinventing himself. You spoke about The Undertaker and Roman Reigns. Undertaker, another perfect example of a guy that, you know, he still plays that character, the Dead Man. He was the American Badass originally as well, previous to that as well. And it just works for him. If you look at a guy like Roman Reigns right now, and you could definitely tell, I mean, WWE can do all the editing they want. They can, you know, they can mute the boos, but they're there and they see it. Especially in Chicago and they're chanting Roman sucks. You can clearly see it. From a character standpoint like that, is it more you turn him heel or do you keep him babyface? Because if he does end up facing The Undertaker, who knows what's going to happen. If he's the guy that retires The Undertaker and finally sends him off riding in the sunset, I can't see anybody really looking at this guy as the face of the company. I know the kids will, but he'll always get that backlash, similar to John Cena.
Here's where the company and I part ways. I've said a lot of good things about the WWE tonight, specifically Vince McMahon. This is where I part ways with the company, and I part ways with the good majority of wrestling fans. I think Roman Reigns is great. I think he's a great wrestler. I think he's a great talker. I think that he puts on as good a show as anybody in the WWE right now. And I am shocked that the wrestling fans hate him as much as they do. And, oh, yes, they do. He's as despised a wrestler as anyone I can think over the last 5 years. I don't think if the WWE attempted to turn him into a bad guy, it would help him any. I think that the wrestling fan of today gets a feeling on a guy, and it's so hard to move the needle. That it used to be, when you did a heel turn, you could turn the majority of the audience, and they would follow. Here's the kind of guy you wrestled, you cheered, and here's the kind of guy that you booed, and they all obliged and did it exactly the way that it was dictated to them. They don't do that anymore. The wrestling fan feels that they're smarter than the WWE, and if they don't like somebody, they're going to boo them no matter how hard you try to put them over, no matter how good a guy you try to make them, no matter how bad a guy you try to make them. It doesn't matter. They've generated an opinion on this guy, and they're not going to change their opinion. And they're either going to cheer him or they're going to boo him, and they're going to boo Roman Reigns forever. I feel badly for Roman Reigns. He's probably my favorite wrestler in the WWE right now, so I'm flying in the face of all the other wrestling fans. If your popularity is determined by how loud they cheer or how loudly they boo, I'm on an island. I'll be perfectly fine on that island. I think Roman Reigns is the best thing they've got in the WWE.
Wow, and so you think... Listen, we got to be honest, though. Undertaker's got, like we're talking about, the nostalgia feel. So everyone's going to be behind the Undertaker.
Roman Reigns is going to get more buried. You talk about booed. You think he's been booed before? Wait till WrestleMania. It'll be the boo fest in the history of the WWE.
You talk about WWE shooting themselves in the foot, right? They're trying to push him as a baby. He's getting him over. And then they're like, well, let's put him against the Undertaker. And then most likely he's going to, you know, Taker's going to do the favor and pass the torch. And the guy's going to get booed. It's going to be worse than it was in Philly, although that's going to be amazing. That could be worse in Philly than, you know. But that's crazy. That just makes no sense. And you know, and then beating Braun Strowman. Again, a guy that they pushed a lot. What do you think? What are your thoughts on Braun Strowman?
He's okay. I was glad to see Roman Reigns beat him because, as I just told you, I'm a huge Roman Reigns fan. He's got the big guy thing going for him, and he's an okay wrestler, and he's an okay character. He's not championship material as far as I'm concerned, but again, I don't always my thoughts, my beliefs, what I see don't always match up with the WWE and Vince McMahon and whoever's making these calls. Strowman served his purpose, and they'll cool him down for a while, and then they'll bring him back again. Will they put him up to championship level? I'm not sure. I don't think he's the kind of guy who should be champion for a long period of time, if he ever gets there.
Well, Jeff, I'm kind of shocked. Jody, seriously, this is the first time I've ever spoken to somebody who's actually a huge fan of Roman Reigns.
Huge fan of Roman Reigns.
Yeah, I mean, I've never heard anybody...
in the WWE.
I've never heard anybody that I've spoken to say how good he is in the ring, and he's great on the microphone. I mean, we can obviously discuss and argue with that, but my thing with you is, I mean, I'm not going to argue and bicker with you of like, why, you know, Roman Reigns sucks and he doesn't, stuff like that, but for me, I'm just curious. When it comes from a business standpoint, the way Jeff just mentioned too, like pitting him against The Undertaker, and you said he's going to get buried because obviously everybody's going to be on the Undertaker's side. Do you look at it from a company standpoint? They've just done a bad job of positioning him. Granted, they put him in spots and it's up to him to either succeed or fail in. But for me, I always kind of thought, and maybe this is more the nostalgia factor in terms of the die hardcore fan, that it should always be authentic. And I think it kind of was maybe 4 years ago where he was eliminating everybody from Royal Rumble and people were cheering him because you didn't hear much from him. He was a badass. His skill set was pretty limited in the moves he did in the ring. And he was just genuinely something that the fans appealed to. The moment he got injured and had that hernia surgery and then came back and started doing promos and started speaking more, it seemed like he was more being force-fed to us. Do you see that side of it as well, besides the fact that I'm obviously a huge fan of his? And is that more a company's fault or the guy's Roman Reigns fault himself?
Although I don't agree with it, everything that the WWE has done in the handling of
Roman. No, of course, yeah. No.
Here's where I can't fault them much. The badass, kick everybody's tail, don't say anything, just be this monster guy, can only last for so long.
It worked for Goldberg, though.
Goldberg got his fair share of promos after a while.
Yeah, but it was kind of always the same spiel. I mean, his matches weren't anything longer than about 10 minutes. And looking now, at this stage, how long he was away from the business, and people were cheering him as if, you know, he's a god and he's in the WWE. WCW died a long time ago. Can that same thing work for Roman, though?
Maybe. You could be right. That could be an angle to go, a road to go down with Roman Reigns. I like Goldberg when he was at his peak, but truth be told, yeah, I thought he was better in the WCW than he was in the WWE. Yeah. They don't want to think about that in the WWE. but I actually thought he was better there. And yeah, even at that, his stay wasn't – he's not John Cena. He's not Hulk Hogan. He's not Stone Cold Steve Austin. He didn't sit atop the wrestling world for years. And, yeah, you always hope that you have a guy like that who can you can take him off the top of the mountain for a while, but then you put him back up there and everybody's going to love it. And, yeah, maybe the WWE thought Roman Reigns is the next guy in that line, because John Cena's days as being the headliner of the entire federation are probably done. He's A, getting old, and B, enjoying doing all the movie stuff and the like. So, and he also is, I think, you've got a more particular wrestling fan that they don't necessarily want to see someone stay up there for 3, 4, 5, 6 years as the number one draw in the company. So you might be right that the WWE might have tried to force Roman Reigns a little bit. But again, the reaction, that's what's changed. You guys started this interview by asking me about when I did the show back in the 80s. The fan base didn't attempt to outsmart Vince McMahon. That we will not accept Roman Reigns because you're telling us to accept Roman Reigns. Because you've decided that Roman Reigns is going to be the next face of the company. We'll show you. We'll boo him every single time out. That didn't happen back in the 80s.
No,
everybody jumped on the Hulk Hogan bandwagon. Everybody loved The Rock. And if you don't think that Vince McMahon decided Hulk Hogan was going to be Hulk Hogan and Steve Austin was going to be Steve Austin and The Rock was going to be The Rock, then you're kidding yourself. Of course Vince decided that for all those guys. He's the star maker.
You made some great distinctions there real quick, Jody, about, you know, you mentioned The Rock and Stone Cold, and then you had like Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage, the Ultimate Warrior. I mean, those guys were quote-unquote baby faces, but not – do you think maybe it's more society now? We just like to boo whoever, you know, – we don't like to be told what to do, so now we're going to just do the opposite against what the authority is, no pun intended?
Yeah, society's changed, yeah.
It has, absolutely.
So we're booing Roman Reigns just because it's the fun thing to do, like booing John Cena?
Well, I think in a way, it's booing Vince McMahon. That there's a bunch of wrestling fans out there that think, well, I could do what Vince does, and he's a multimillionaire. He's got this billion-dollar corporation, and why don't I have this guy? I'll show Vince McMahon. He thinks he's smarter than me. No, he's not. I'll boo his favorite wrestler. Okay, and meanwhile, you pay your monthly fee to get the WWE Network, and you go to the shows, and you let your boos be heard, and Vince cashes your check. So, yeah, you're moving the needle on Vince and changing him.
Damn, Jeff, we've been approaching this all wrong then.
as much as this Roman Reigns talk is, and we could have a whole podcast on that, we were talking about Bill Goldberg, and it's a little head-scratching, and we were talking about this the day of the title change. Bill Goldberg kind of didn't see eye to eye with Vince and Hunter, and you know, kind of left on not so good terms, came back, and then you know, they saw that, you know, he could still be a box office hit. And your head scratch a little bit when you think that maybe they could have done the same thing with Sting, and he could have had a little nostalgia title run with the title when he took on Seth Rollins?
Yeah, I that's what I was rooting for because I was a Sting fan.
Yeah.
It might not have worked for other reasons. Certain things may have gone on behind closed doors that we didn't know about. I don't know how much the negotiation had to go on with Goldberg as far as what he's going to get paid. And when a guy's sitting out and he's done, and he really means it that he's done, and he doesn't want to return, doesn't have to return, and you're trying to woo him back, and you think you can do a big bit of business with him, well, then, yeah, he's going to have a big say in how that he's handled. For most wrestlers, Vince dictates everything. But some wrestlers have achieved the status where they get to have a say in on it. I don't know how Goldberg shook out. I don't know if Goldberg wanted to go back. They tell the story that he wanted to do it so his kids could see him wrestle again. That could be a very convenient and a storyline that the fans could like and warm up to, or it could be the truth, which means Goldberg went to Vince and said, listen, if we come back, maybe he's working on the cheap. Maybe he's doing exactly what Vince. Maybe he came back to Vince with hat in hand. If that's the case, then Vince is using him exactly as Vince sees fit.
Damn, he is a genius, Jeff. And Jody, you just made that perfect example. Can't hate you for that one. But speaking of the product that we're watching, you know, like I said, during this time, everybody gets excited because it's WrestleMania time. And, you know, a lot of other promotions kind of piggyback off of it to kind of get more notoriety. Do you also, besides WWE programming that we're talking about right now, are there other avenues that you watch? I mean, NXT, I think, is great for a die hardcore when you watch that. It's only an hour programming. It's exclusively on the network. I think a lot of people always kind of like that, those NXT TakeOver specials. I don't know if you've seen them. Do you also watch other promotions like Ring of Honor, for example, or New Japan Wrestling?
Here's the thing about NXT. I'm a WWE guy through and through. Don't watch Japan. Don't follow Japan.
Okay.
I don't know anything about Japan. I understand that it's a damn good promotion, and guys like Styles have come out of it and hit the WWE running the way that he has. Here's my problem with NXT, and this is purely on me. This is not the WWE. This is not the business. This is just a Jody McDonald problem.
Okay.
I like when a new guy comes on the scene and I don't know anything about him, and I'm just judging him from that first time I see him in the ring. And, yeah, of course, the announcer's going to hype and point out what they want you to see, and if you have a discernible eye, then you pick up what you like or what you don't like or whatever else. But that was one of my favorite things about wrestling before NXT or any minor league system or guys coming in from independent federations from the other side of the country. I thought that was so cool to see a guy come in and try and play the game along with how big a star is this going to be? Who would he match up well against? Who do I want to see him in the ring against? NXT kind of takes that away. Because you see the storylines. They're written before they ever get to Raw or SmackDown because you get a big-time taste of them in NXT. So, do I watch NXT? Yes. Is it must-watch television for me? No. Because I don't want to know too much. I'll watch it, and then I won't watch it for a month. And I'll catch an episode, and I won't watch it for another 3 weeks. I'll almost never watch it 2 weeks in a row because then I feel like I am too involved, and I don't want to be that involved because I want to see when the guys make the. It's the same thing as baseball. I come from a baseball family. That's part of the fun of it. And now you can watch minor league baseball games, and you get stats on minor league baseball players again on your computer in 35 seconds if you're good enough at hitting the buttons. It used to be you knew nothing about these guys before they came up, and then you saw them jump into your favorite major league team. You had no idea whether they're going to be overmatched or they're going to step right in or they're going to become stars in the drop of a hat. Some of that curtain has been pulled back with NXT. It's good product. It's more money. It gives the guys the chance to step into a half a spotlight before they got to step into the full spotlight. I get all the upside for it. Yeah, I don't like it because I like being surprised.
It's kind of like when you get that, you know, like for example, like you get that rookie or that guy in AAA or AA, and you're like, you hear the things about him, you look at the box score, but you really can't see the guy.
Right.
So I see where you're making that kind of kind of similarity to that. But you got to look at the guys like in NXT. Like I think everyone can't wait to see Nakamura, what he can do up there. Everyone's trying to be like, oh, who's he going to fight? And you know, you make a great point on NXT too, and you know, well, differentiated between the other companies, but. My question to you is, we're talking about NXT. We're talking about the women that came up as far as the Women's Revolution. Your thoughts really quick on the Women's Revolution. You think it's better than when Trish and Lita were there? Do you like Sasha Banks? Do you like Bayley, Charlotte Flair? Your thoughts on the women's division?
Here's what I find humorous, and I don't spend hours reading wrestling blogs on a week-in, week-out basis. If one pops up, somebody will follow on Twitter, write something, yeah, I'll punch up and I'll read it. People are trying to take analysis of the women's division and put it on a par with the men's division, which I think is completely unfair. And if they got complaints about the men's division that it's too repetitious, we've seen this story already, why are they doing this again? That's fair, because they have as many wrestlers in the Federation and split into two different shows now, so it's not the same guys every single week. And if you're going to get on the men for it, you should. The women's division 5 years ago, 10 years ago, was three gals. That's it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
They fought each other every. They'd roll them out once every 3 weeks, and it was either A against B, or B against C, or A against C. And that was it. And there was nothing else to it. at least now they're bringing in the women, and they're trying to come up with different angles. And going into WrestleMania, they may have a fatal four-way, and I think all four of them are great. So, all right, it's not – the people are trying to compare the women to the men. It's just not as big a division. And it hasn't gotten there, and it's made good strides. And if you thought they were going to catch the men in one fell swoop, it wasn't going to happen. I think they've done a really good job with the women's division over the last couple of years.
Do you think a part of that has to do not only with the women's division, but when we're talking about the men as well? And you mentioned NXT, right, and how you said you don't like to know too much about the individual. Does the scenario nowadays, when we watched it back, when I watched it back in the 90s with Hogan, he had Jim Duggan, you know, the Ultimate Warrior, Jake Roberts, you didn't really know a lot about these individuals except the characters they played. Is breaking kayfabe, as they say now, kind of hurting it a little bit, giving away a lot of that illusion? So is it helping them that we know more about Charlotte, about, for example, the whole situation with her brother and how, you know, he passed away and she's doing it more to live in his dream, and Sasha Banks's, you know, dream of wanting to do this since she was a little girl? Does that help the women, the men in NXT, or is that kind of hurting them a little bit?
Here's the reason why I think it's good. And I'm not sure. This is just, again, my opinion. There is a certain group out there that will not like it. That think, you know, you're supposed to stay as the character you play, and the fact that you're doing something else 23 hours a day other than being in a ring or in your outfit to wrestle or whatever else, they don't want to know about that. They don't want to be, they want to be ignorant to it. It's kind of like me and new wrestlers coming up in NXT. Yeah. I'm really old school that way, and there are some wrestling fans that are really old school about that. I like it. I'd like to know more. I think anytime I learn something about a wrestler, it makes that person more interesting to me and makes me want to watch their matches even more. I think that Vince McMahon once did a study and came up with, for the people that were ticking off, if whatever percentage of our wrestling fan, if all the wrestling fans in the world are 100%, if there's 8% that hate the fact that we're giving them more info and pulling the curtain back a little and showing them a little bit more about the persons that are our wrestlers, we're adding 14 or 15 more percent of people who are going to like it even more because it makes them more normal. It makes them more human. So he decided that we're adding more than we're losing. You're going to lose. Anytime you're going to do something as drastic as that, you're going to have some people that you're going to tick off.
Oh, yeah, of course.
But if you're making more new fans than you are ticking off old fans, then it's good for business.
No, yeah, totally. Yeah, totally agreed. And, you know, now with all the programming on the network and all that stuff, just how much wrestling are you able to intake during the week? I know you're busy, you're a fan and WIP. Like, how much do you do you watch during a given week?
How much WWE content do you digest a week?
Yeah. That's a really good question. I would love to say that it's 6.7 hours a week. I have no idea. There are some weeks where I'll watch 10 or 12 hours. And there are other weeks where I'll
binge watching.
Catch a couple of minutes of Raw on Monday night, and I'll watch it while I'm on the air doing a show at that time. So I'm half paying attention and half trying to do a show, and I won't catch any of SmackDown. So it's a very fluid thing depending on what my schedule is like. I'll go back and watch Raw. I DVR Raw no matter what. And I'll always go back and watch the first 10 minutes and the last 10 minutes because they do a great job of setting up their show. If they do a great job in the first 10 minutes, they're probably going to suck me in to watch more of the show thereafter. I'll always watch the last 10 minutes because I want to know what's coming next, and they do a really good job of setting that up. And, yes, always make sure you set your DVR for 3.5 hours, not just 3 hours, because they never...
Because it overlaps, right?
They never end that show at 11 o'clock. It's 11:06.
It's going to end, you're like, damn it.
11:08 or 11:09. So, yeah, the first couple times I learned a lesson, never made that mistake again. So I'd love to give you a hard and fast number, but it absolutely changes week to week.
But that's the interesting thing, though. It's because social media being the way it is, like, you don't really have to. You could be a diehard and not watch it for a span of a month, and still you're able to catch tidbits. Like you said, you watch the first 10 minutes of this, last 10 minutes of that, and you still get the idea of what's going on. Something
Brian,
I wanted to
ask. If you don't mind, I just want to ask Jody, what do you think?
Of course
about
I mind, Jeff. I'm sorry, Jody. He always interrupts me. I can't stand working with him. You know, I don't do this out of the joyness of my heart, but go ahead, Jeff. Go ahead.
Go to your respective corners.
Because you mentioned Raw and SmackDown. Everyone has their idea of, like, SmackDown's better because it's 2 hours and Raw is three. What do you think? What do you think is a better show?
See, again, I'm a fan. And if you're a fan, 3 hours is better than 2 hours. It's really pretty simple. Now, which is the more consistent show? SmackDown, because it's only 2 hours. And you don't have to fill 3 hours. And some weeks they try and fill 3 hours on Raw, and I say, why did I waste 2.5 hours out of the 3 hours I just gave it, 3 and change hours I just gave it, and it's not as good. SmackDown, because it's only two, more often than not, it's going to be a little bit more action-packed too. But for those shows, like last night, where it was tremendous as a setup coming out of the pay-per-view, looking ahead to WrestleMania, it was certainly the best one they've had on this year and probably the best Raw they've had in the last 6 months, as far as I was concerned. I was really happy that it was 3 hours and change, rather than, oh, shoot, if it was SmackDown, it's 2 hours and done, and I got to get to their 10 o'clock show on USA Network, I'd be all ticked off. So they are different shows because of the length, but I'll always take my chances on getting more and hoping they give it to me.
Well, I love getting more of Jody Mack. I have a little less of Jeff Martin. So that being said, Jody, I wanted to ask you real quick about the Hall of Fame, because you said you're a diehard. You've been watching it for a while. You're old school. So nothing's more old school, no pun intended, than the WWE Hall of Fame. Seeing the entrance right now, you have the Kurt Angles. I'm so stoked to see Ravishing Rick Rude in there. DDP, Beth Phoenix, the Rock and Roll Express. How do you feel about this lineup for the WWE Hall of Fame? And who do you think right now is a Hall of Famer that's not in there right now?
I usually like debating Hall of Fames, baseball, basketball, football, hockey. For whatever reason, I don't get as jazzed by the WWE Hall of Fame. I think they do a good job. One of my favorites of all time, DDP, is going in, so I'll certainly be watching because I'm a huge, and always have been a huge Diamond Dallas Page fan.
Do you do the yoga?
No, I won't do yoga. Don't need to. That's not a prerequisite to be a DDP fan.
Okay.
Some of the guys they put in because they hung around for a long time, because they were friendly with the people that were in charge. I wouldn't think of them as Hall of Famers. And that's the beauty of this. We debate, as I said, doing a talk show, I debate football Hall of Famers and basketball Hall of Famers and baseball Hall of Famers all the time. There's no real direction to the WWE Hall of Fame. The criteria is whatever the hell you make it. And Vince has his own criteria, and he doesn't explain it to anybody, and he doesn't have to explain it to anybody. So I have my own set standards in my mind, some of which you've gotten in the Hall of Fame I absolutely love, and others I question. So it's always fun when they come out with the guys that are going to get in. But I can't get too worked up about it when they pick someone I don't like, because I don't know. I didn't set the rules. I don't make the rules. They don't explain the rules. The rules are whatever the hell Vince thinks the rules should be.
Of course. But is there somebody there you wish was in there? I mean, not even wish, but you're like, I kind of want him in there because I liked him growing up or watching him.
I'll tell you a guy who's not wrestling anymore. And again, we know in baseball and football that there is a standard amount of time that you have to be not playing before you get eligible for the Hall of Fame. You got to be out for 5 years for baseball. Yeah. And if you come back, the clock can restart. It happens in football. It doesn't happen much in baseball. One of my favorite wrestlers of all time isn't wrestling anymore. Who knows? Maybe he makes a comeback. Maybe that's why the WWE is holding off on him. I was a gigantic Rob Van Dam fan. He is one of my favorite wrestlers of all time. I usually like the bigger guys. I am like I'm a Roman fan. I was a Batista fan. Usually I gravitate toward the big, strong, kick everybody's ass type wrestler. But Van Dam was a great technical wrestler, and yes, he knew how to play the crowd like nobody's business, and I thought he gave great promos and interviews and the like. So Rob Van Dam is one of my all-time faves. I think of him as a Hall of Famer. Now, he's a guy who made his name on the independent circuit before he came into the WWE, and I do believe that factors in, at least in part, in Vince's line of thinking. So I don't know when or if Van Dam's ever going to get in, but if he doesn't, I'll call it a travesty.
Oh, man, Mr. Monday Night, man. Rob Van Dam, Mr. that's a great one, Jody. He really should be Hall of Famer,
Mr. 420.
Though. Yep. Hey, but you know what, though? Hey, if the WWE Hall of Fame could give us a, you know, if a president of the United States could come out of the WWE Hall of Fame, they must be doing something right?
Right, correct.
But, Jody, so being from Philly, you never caught anything from ECW?
I went to a couple of ECW shows.
Wow, how was that atmosphere?
I'll tell you who, I won't call him a friend, but he would come.
That's okay, I don't call Jeff a friend either. So that's
good. Yeah. You're probably pretty smart in that way. But doing shows here in Philadelphia for many years, we would do one from a McDonald's once a week, McDonald's. It was a good sales angle. And he came in one day and introduced himself. And I knew who he was, but he felt the need to come up and introduce himself and said, yeah, I just happen to be a fan of the show. I've overheard that you did wrestling up in New York years ago. I said, yeah, I used to. Sandman was a huge ECW guy here in Philly. He was one of the most popular guys in Philly. And he came into one of my remote broadcasts and just said, yeah, I kind of like the way you talk about the Eagles, but you should do more wrestling down here. And I told him, listen, I would if I could, but my boss here in Philly, not as big a wrestling fan. If I started talking wrestling, I'd get myself in trouble. So I apologize. Don't hold your breath. It won't be happening here, but not because I don't want to, but because I can't. And he stopped by probably three or four times over a 3 or 4 year period. Once a year, he'd stop in, just, hey, Jody Mac, how's it going? And he'd grab his Big Mac, sit down, and stay and listen to 10 minutes of the show, and then just get up and walk out. And one of the little kids would recognize him and come over and ask him for an autograph. But for most of the party, just sit at McDonald's and have lunch and listen to the show for a couple minutes and get up and get out. But from there on in, I was a Sandman fan the rest of my life.
See, you never know who's listening
to
you,
stories.
Jody.
It's those stories, though. You know
never know
I mean?
Who's listening to you. Exactly. And you know what? Jeff, don't you think that Jody has... I mean, we spoke about Jody's voice and how distinguished it is when we first had him before we did the interview. It's like, I could see you do a color commentating for, WWE. Would you be opposed to doing that? His face is a crimson mass and, you know, oh my God. I mean, all those catchphrases are caught up. I don't know, Jeff. I think that might be a new feature for him.
See, I wouldn't close the door on Jody hosting a podcast, though. I could see him do that. That's what I could see Jody
I'm doing a podcast, not a wrestling podcast, but I got a podcast now.
With your daughter, right?
With my daughter, yes. Which is a lot of fun. We just started doing episode 4. What episode is this for you guys?
This is 65.
65, yeah. You've been doing it a little bit longer than me. Episode 5 coming up next Monday for Maddie Mac and Daddy Mac. But anyway,
oh, nice.
A quick story.
What are you guys talking about? Like anything in particular? Sports? What are you talking about?
We do 45, 50 minutes every week. The world of sports and everything else in the world. Nice. When we do sports, I lead. She counterpunches. When we do the rest of the world, entertainment, music, internet,
she leads.
Teams, stuff like that, she leads. I counterpunch. So it truly is a 50-50 show, and we've had a lot of fun doing it so far. If anybody wants to check it out, it's on wildfireradio.com, the Daddy Mac podcast. We're having fun with it. But I will tell you my one story. I'm never going to work for Vince. I have no desire to work for Vince. I will continue to pay for his product, but I don't want to be a wrestling announcer. However, and I've told this on the air a handful of times, but maybe not often, and you guys have never caught it, I did call play-by-play for one wrestling show. It was an independent show. It was done at LIU in Brooklyn, not far off the Manhattan Bridge in their old gymnasium. Richie was the one who was offered at Mancuso, my old wrestling partner on WFAN, and he said, I can do color if I can get you to do play-by-play. They want both of us. Then if you can't do it, I'm not getting it. And I thought it'd be fun, but I wasn't all that jazzed about it. But I wanted to do it for Rich more than anything else because he had done all these shows with me. He wasn't getting paid for it. He was doing it for the love of the show and the love of wrestling. So if this was a little way that I could give back to him, I said, all right, Richie, I'll do the show with you. So it was an independent show. It wasn't big. This is 1989, I want to say. But two guys on the card were Nikolai Volkoff, who was a Hulk Hogan, when Hulk was just breaking into the Federation, he was one of the first villains that Hulk ever went against. And a guy by the name of, and if you don't recognize the name, because he's all the way back into the 80s and before the 80s, he was at the end of his run by the time he went the independent line, a guy by the name of Abdullah the Butcher.
Oh, of course.
And
wow.
those were the two former WWEs who were the headliners on this independent card. And after the show was over, we got to go in the back and meet the guys. I apologize because I don't remember, but I think Abdullah the Butcher's real name is like Fred Jones, the most common name you could possibly ever think of. And he's from the Bronx. He's not from Sudan. And just a regular guy. And they were both real cool. We had a good time doing the show. But it wasn't high budget. It wasn't well planned out. It was just come, call the matches, have a good time, blah, blah, blah. So we're doing Abdullah the Butcher's match. And, of course, the action spills out of the ring. And he comes over near the broadcast location. And they're pounding on each other. They bang into our table. And Abdullah the Butcher goes to pick up my monitor, which has got the video cables and feed attached to it. And it's an actual television, mini television. And I put my hand down on it just in case he thought it was a prop, because there was no practice ahead of time. Nobody discussed with us that Abdullah's going to come right and he's going to pick up the thing, he's going to smash it over his head. So I didn't know what to do. So I just put my hand down on the top of the monitor, like, in case you don't know, this is real. And he looked at me. And Abdullah Butcher was very famous for being a bleeder. And he had so many cuts in his forehead. You breathed hard, and Abdullah would break out in blood coming off the top of his head. So he was, of course, bleeding all over the place at this point in the match. And I tell him, just put my hand on the thing. I didn't say, hey, you can't take that or anything. I just slammed my hand down to try and tell him while not breaking character and continuing to announce. And he looked at me. And if looks could kill, I would have been dead right there on the spot. And he just shook his head at me. And his blood came flying all over me. Ooh. And I had to go get my jacket cleaned. I had Abdullah the Butcher's blood. I was tempted to keep it dirty because it wasn't that great a jacket. But it was good enough that I did want to wear it again. but Abdullah the Butcher bled on me in a match. The one wrestling match that I did announce, we had a fun time. It's something that I can tell my grandkids about someday. But no, I won't ever be working for Vince.
Wow. Jody, great stuff, man.
Can't make
great
up those stories, man.
Guys, my pleasure. Appreciate
it. Listen, Jody.
Let's do this again sometime down the road.
Definitely, Jody. Awesome. Thank you so much.
You got it.
And a special thanks goes out to Jody Mack. Wow, Jeff, great find on that. If you guys want to follow him, I mean, if you haven't, then you're living under a rock. You'll catch him on Twitter, at Jody Mack Man. And also catch his new podcast he's doing with his daughter. It's called Daddy Mack and Maddie Dack. So it's really fun how, you know, it's interesting when he spoke about, Jeff, the concept that he's doing this with his daughter. She's really into entertainment and all that stuff, and he's obviously into sports. So it'd be kind of interesting to see. I'm definitely going to listen to it, see how these two work well off each other, because you know maybe it'll give us some tips of you and I working well with each other in the near future. But a great find of his, man, and
hey,
just
listen,
really great
to
have him on the show.
I've been listening to Jody Mack for the longest time, and it's great to have him on. I met him actually.
Was it surreal for you?
It wasn't surreal, but it was kind of more like, wow, man, here's the voice I've heard basically growing up and, you know, talking sports and to be a fan where I heard him mostly. And then being able to chance to meet him and talk to him personally and get to know him, really great guy. I know he had his own show on ESPN, had the midday show, I think, at one time, too, on WFAN with Steve Summers. So this guy's been, you know, just knows everything. His dad actually was a GM for the Mets back in the day too. So he knows his baseball, and hopefully one day we'll talk baseball with him, see how my Mets are going to do this year. But hey, great to have Jody Mack on the show, Brian. And knows his wrestling too. And that Abdullah the Butcher story was just an amazing way to close out a great interview with Jody McDonald.
Those are the best stories. The stories of those infamous road stories, or stories of what we've had experience wise in the business. And that was a great one by Jody. And we'd love to have him back on again. He had a great time. We had a great time. And hopefully sooner than later, we'll have him back. And the pleasure is going to be all ours as well. So, Jeff, before we close on this, too, I also want to mention, too, guys, long overdue. I'm so happy that this happened, and reports came out, I believe, on Bleacher Report that Ravishing Rick Rude will now be the newest member of the WWE Hall of Fame. And, we talked to Jody. He said, Hall of Famers, it depends on how you critique it. Some people are for it. Some people are against it. Some people just don't understand. But for me, I'm so happy because at least Rick Rude gets the recognition he deserves. The only downfall is, and Jeff, I don't know if you can attest to this, but when I see guys like Rick Rude and Macho Man Randy Savage, I want to hear these guys and hear from them, like Kurt Hennings as well and Eddie Guerrero's. I wanted to hear what they had to say on their mind. But, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, another Hall of Famer, will be inducting Rick Rude in the Hall of Fame. What are your thoughts, Jeff, real quick, on Rick Rude being in the Hall of Fame?
Oh, man, long overdue. I mean, I teared up when I saw the vignette for Rick Rude, just because, again, it's part of my childhood, man. I'm an 80s baby, and I grew up at the time. And Rick Rude, I remember his rivalry with Jake the Snake Roberts and the whole Shell Roberts. And I remember when Jake the Snake Roberts was like, if you wear my wife's face, print them on your tights one more time, I'm going to take them off. And he goes out and he pulls them off, and they do the black censorship, and that was great. And also his rivalry with the Ultimate Warrior. And then, of course, how he never became the WWE champ. He had to go to WCW, had a rivalry with Sting. Actually, the funny part is with Sting actually kind of like ended his career with that back bump in Japan. And then, just seeing Rick Rude always wanting him to come back. Looked like he was going to make a comeback. And then, unfortunately, it didn't happen with WWE. And again, another star gone too soon. But yeah, man, would have loved to have heard stories from Rick Rude. But and also, too, our condolences go to the Bass family. The outlaw Ron Bass passed away too, so our condolences there. And legends that you grow up with and are no longer with us, and it's sad and bittersweet.
Yes, bittersweet, but we'll be happy to see him take his rightful place in the WWE Hall of Fame as well. And before I close, too, let's not forget to promote a promotion that we're very very proud to promote as well. And we've seen a couple of their shows, and we like the hope, not like the hope, but hope in the future there'll be a lot of more promotions and partnerships with WrestlePro as well. March 11th in Rahway, New Jersey. Guys, don't forget, at the Recreation Center this Saturday night, so definitely go watch it. Jeff and I will be there as well, so you get to hang out with the Jersey Wrecking Crew.
Yeah, 275 East Milton Avenue, the Rahway Recreation Center. Tickets are still available. March 11th, we will be there, so say hi to the Jersey Wrecking Crew. And of course, their big show, it will be the last show. That's March 11th is the last show before the big one at WrestleCon. March 30th in Orlando, and you'll have meet and greets with the big guy, and I think they're able to get Wade Barrett, Stu Bennett there. So it's going to be a great month for WrestlePro, and again, we hope to do a lot of things later down the road with WrestlePro. But just a great promotion, and along with our good friend Dave Destruction, Dave Sturcio. So we wish them the best, and we'll see them there Saturday night.
And in Orlando as well, too. So looking forward to a lot of things now as we lead into, and I've said it again, the road to WrestleMania, but it's actually here. Nothing more is in the way. No more speed bumps. It's WrestleMania, Orlando, Florida, sunny Orlando. Looking really nice right now, Jeff. And can't wait for it as we start progressing with these storylines and start making our own predictions of what's going to happen on the biggest show of them all. So you guys have been listening to the High Spot Podcast. Again, catch us on Twitter at High Spot Podcast for all the latest news, notes, and guests in the world of professional wrestling and entertainment. For the Jersey Wrecking Crew, Jeff Martin, I'm Brian Berga. After listening to this episode, your life is just too sweet.